Hi. Good afternoon and welcome to the Jefferson County Public Hospital District Number 2 Board of Commissioners meeting. This is our regular session on Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. This is being held under the Proclamation 2028 of Governor Inslee, the COVID-19 meeting with no in-person attendance allowed. This regular session will be officially recorded, and time shown on the agenda are estimates only. In lieu of live comments, because there is no live public comment allowed, members of the public may comment on any agenda item or any other matter related to the district via a letter addressed to the commissioners at 834 Sheridan Street, Port Townsend, Washington, 98368. Or via email to commissioners@jeffersonhealthcare.org. So the first order of business, this is our education section. This, as usual, we'll have two sessions. The first will be the education and the second will be our business section. So we will start with the education and that will run from 2:30 to 3:15. We will recess. And then we will come back at 3:30 to approximately 5:30. So without any other further ado, I will ask for approval of the agenda from the board. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries, and we'll go right into our education topic, which is just culture, health equity. This is something we've been working on, the staff has been working hard on for quite some time, and we're anxious to hear what's being done. So Brandy Manuel, our Chief Patient Safety and Quality Officer, and Dunia, too, I believe, is there. Is that correct?
Yeah. Hi,
all right.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. I'm actually going to suggest that Dunia is going to be our primary presenter, at least in the beginning part here, and then we'll work together on the latter parts of the presentation. And I think I saw Dunia on the line here.
I am here. So thank you so much for this opportunity to present. Please let me know if you cannot hear me, and Brittany, I'll just work with you to move the slides forward. But this is going to give, if you want to move to the next slide, please. We're going to do a little bit of background on the history of equity, and especially the history of equity in healthcare. We're going to talk about what equity is and how equity has been sort of rolled out at Jefferson Healthcare. And then Brandy will really take over to talk about equity and just culture. And then hopefully there'll be a little bit of time for discussion and conversation. And so please let me know if you have any questions as we go along. And otherwise, hopefully there'll be some robust discussion here at the end. Next slide. So the history of equity in healthcare, also known as racism and the lack of equity. Next slide. So does anyone here know who this person is? Commissioner Dressler? This is J. Marion Sims. He is known as the father of modern gynecology. He was really active in the late 1800s, and he essentially invented the vaginal speculum, did a lot around fistula repair, and he did a significant amount of research that was conducted on enslaved Black women without any anesthesia. And the thought process was that Black people did not feel pain, so therefore none of them needed any kind of anesthesia. The only legal requirement for women to be involved in his research was that they had consent from their owners. And so a lot of what modern gynecology looks like now is because of this person and the work that he did on enslaved Black women. Next slide. Oh, sorry.
Interesting. Just say something, Dunia. We once had in United Kingdom, where I worked, and I was a nurse midwife, a doctor who was doing his internship from Chad, and he refused to give white women anesthesia for suturing. And this was back in the 70s.
Wow.
Shocking.
It was, yeah, definitely shocking. It was interesting in J. Marion Sims' research. He spent 4 years sort of perfecting his version of doing fistula repair on enslaved black women without any anesthesia. And the next year he started to do the same procedure on white women where he did give them anesthesia. And so there's a History Channel documentary on him, and it's intense if you're interested in looking at that. Another example of the lack of equity and racism in healthcare and in healthcare research is the Tuskegee syphilis study, which I'm sure many of you know. At a really high level, it started in 1932. It was supposed to only be 6 months, but lasted for 40 years. And so this was comprised of about 600 black men, who the majority of whom, a little over half, did have syphilis. And they were sort of studying the effects of syphilis in the body. In 1947, so 15 years after the study started, penicillin became the drug of choice for syphilis. It was never offered to anyone in the study. I think many of us know this. It's often referenced as one of the really, really terrible things that happened against humanity, and has really sort of set the stage. Next slide. I'm also hearing an echo of myself. I don't know if, Brittany, we can mute. Thank you. So another thing that I used to do with a friend of mine, and it was really them that sort of led this effort, was a thing called what they called infobombing. And so what it was is, obviously, I was not doing any kind of graffiti because that is not allowed. However, what we would do is we would print off these facts that really led to sort of an equity lens, that led to a population health lens. We would print them off. We would have these citations embedded within them. The later versions had QRC codes. And we would actually wheat paste them all over mostly Capitol Hill in Seattle. So again, not doing anything illegal with graffiti because wheat paste was allowable. But we sort of pulled all of these facts out of a variety of different studies that we had been looking at. And so this one is, black women in California are 400% as likely to die in childbirth as white women. And this came out of the California Department of Public Health. From 1999 to 2013. If you actually go to the website, which is now called socialmeasures.org, you can go back into the actual study and have more information around it. But this was posted on a mailbox on Capitol Hill. Next slide. Next slide, please. Thanks. Another one is that black 16-year-old males in Southside Chicago have only a 50% chance of living to 65. So at age 16, the chance of living to 65 is only 50%. And this is a study that came out of the American Journal of Public Health in 2011. And so this was on a newspaper thing also near Seattle University and Capitol Hill. And so this is another indication of sort of the lack of equity in the way that people of color have historically sort of fallen out and are not getting the same amount of health care, don't have the same health outcomes as white people do. Next slide. It's not only health care that has these level of disparities, so I guess we're not alone. I don't know if that makes anyone feel better. But New York has more men of color in its prisons than in their public universities. This is also on Seattle U's campus. And so these level disparities are found across all sectors. And so I wanted to add a couple of these facts to sort of show that it's not just healthcare. But this doesn't really make me feel much better for the state of everything here. Next slide. This one is specific to Washington State. American Indian men in Washington are twice as likely to be in prison as they are attending a public university. And again, underneath that, this is a research-based study. We have the citation there if anyone wants to learn more. There were probably another 15 or 20 of these that I could have pulled, but I just wanted to pull sort of a smattering and just give an overview of sort of the past of healthcare and other sectors whenever we're talking about equity or the lack of equity over time, and why this topic is so critically important to what we're doing and critically important to the equity initiative that Jefferson Healthcare specifically is embarking on over the last few years and looking forward to the future. Next slide. This was published in 2016. Cone Health is a large health system out of North Carolina, and they actually publicly apologized for discriminatory past. And so they had been part of a large lawsuit by a number of providers of color who were just saying that they were discriminatory. And Cone Health actively apologized publicly for what they had done. They started a scholarship for $250,000, which is, in the grand scheme of things, actually not very much, but it is something. And so healthcare and other sectors are acknowledging their role in institutional racism and what that has meant. But I really don't think it's enough. And not only is it not enough, it also persists to this day, if we want to go to the next slide. And so this came out of a Seattle Times article in, I believe, Dr. Ben Danielson. I'm sure most of you have read the stories of this and have heard about it, but Dr. Danielson, who was the medical director for the Odessa Brown Clinic, he resigned in November in protest from Seattle Children's. He accused the hospital of racism. There were multiple instances where it had been brought to the administration and the board's attention and nothing had been done for it. And so Dr. Danielson actively resigned and said he could no longer work at an institution that allowed this. And so these are things that are very pertinent now. And while we think we're getting better, I think we have a really, really long way to go, especially for those of you who know of Dr. Danielson's work and the amazing things that he's done for communities of color in Seattle. I think that this was a huge, huge incident for Seattle Children's and a huge loss to that community as well. Although from my understanding, he is going to University of Washington to do pediatric work there, but still he was really a pillar in the community. And so this was a massive loss. Next slide, please. And then racism in Jefferson County. And so I'll talk a little bit later on about our work with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. But one of the things that we were required to do was to look into the racism that was found in Jefferson County. And Tina Herschelman, out of Marketing and Population Health, really did an amazing job. She met with our historical society to better understand Jefferson County and really looked at the land that was previously occupied by two different tribes, if we want to go to the next slide. And actually, the land that Jefferson Healthcare occupies right now, and we do serve a predominantly white community, 91.4% white, is a population that lives on the Skollum and the Chimicum's unjustly colonized lands. And so the next step in this work for the IHI is to actually look at equity or the lack of equity in the history of Jefferson Healthcare specifically. And so we've looked at it for Jefferson County as a whole, and it has really been colonized lands and living here and working on these lands. But then what Jefferson Healthcare has done specifically is going to be the next step in this process. And so I think that the history of healthcare, the history of many sectors is really fraught with racism and institutional racism. And how we get past that is through a lot of intentionality and a lot of really hard work, both as individuals and as colleagues and institutions, internally and externally with our community. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that next. I'm going to do a quick reminder of what equity is so we're all on the same page, and then we'll talk more about Jefferson Healthcare's equity initiative specifically. Next slide. So these slides you all have actually already seen. But just making sure that we are on the exact same page for what is equity, because the word is often used interchangeably with equality. It is a little bit different, but really understanding sort of the background and making sure we have a common understanding. Next slide. So I don't know if you remember, but I presented this slide in July. But again, this is the traditional imagery of equality versus equity. And so for equality, you can see there are three people. They're trying to overlook a fence at a baseball game that's going on. And equal, everyone gets the same sort of support. So everyone has the same size box that they are able to stand on. The tall adult on the left all the way down to the child on the right. They all get the same size box. What this image says is that equity is that actually we want everyone to be able to see that baseball game. So the tall person, the adult on the left in the orange pants, he doesn't actually need anything. So he's able to just stand on the ground. The child in the middle needs one box, and the little kiddo there on the right actually needs two to be able to see the game. But everyone is able to see that game. Everyone can make it to the same end point, which is watching that game. There's an updated image on the next slide, which I actually almost prefer. And again, this is sort of that same image. This is from Jessica Malami. But on the left-hand side, there's a person who actually, there's a little rise in the hill. And so in the previous image, you could see that person on the right was a child and they were overall shorter. they were smaller. And so it was something about that person that made them unable to see over that fence to see that game. There was something inherent in that person. As opposed to this, where actually the two people are the exact same size. What's different is that the person on the right, the figure in black, is actually at a disadvantage. They're sort of standing in a little bit of a hole. And so it has nothing to do with anything about that person. It actually has to do with their circumstance. On the right-hand side, that equity is giving them two boxes to allow them to see over the fence and be at that same level as the white figure on the left-hand side. Next slide. And then Brandy's going to talk about why health equity sort of falls into quality and really how this relates to her work.
Yeah, thank you. So health equity is often referred to as kind of the forgotten aim. So when we talk about quality, there are really six domains that we've gotten very comfortable referring to. The first one is safety. Is the healthcare we're providing safe? Is it effective? Is it patient-centered? Are we meeting the needs of our patient in that moment? Is it timely? Do they get the care when they need it? Is it efficient, or are we wasting patients' time? Are we wasting resources? Are we doing repetitive tests when we don't really need to? And then is it equitable? And historically, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about equity, largely because we didn't know how to define it. And so I appreciate what Dunya just really pointed out around the outcomes, because if our goal is to give safe patient care, our goal is that everybody achieves the best possible outcomes, then we're missing something if we're not talking about this through an equity lens. Next slide.
So a little bit of the background, and I'll actually hand it back to Brandy, is really talking about this over time. And so we've been working in this sphere for a while, really starting with the Health Equality Index. And Brandy was much more involved in that work than me.
Well, and we talked a little bit about that in November. I think we started with one goal in mind based on patient feedback, which was that we were not providing the same level of care, the same quality of care for a subset of our population. And so a team from Jefferson Healthcare partnered with a team from our community and really looked at the care we were providing for LGBTQ patients. And that started or kicked off our equity work. And as Dunya mentioned, I think initially the committee was the Healthcare Equality Committee and recognized over time that that didn't exactly call out the work that we were trying to do. So that was a little bit about the background. And then as time went on, we recognized that there were other disparities in care that we can and should be looking at through an equity lens. Next slide. And then COVID. So we start this really, really important work, and we begin to really get all levels of the organization talking about equity and thinking about equity. And then we have a pandemic that we put in the middle of it. And so really, that created a pause in some of the equity work that we had planned on really diving into. And so the question became, where do we go from here? And so Dunya did a beautiful job of really connecting with the hearts and minds of our team members over the summer to learn where did we need to focus? Where were we not spending enough time? Where did we need to have a better understanding in order to move forward? Next slide.
And going back just one moment to sort of that image, and I was very intentional whenever I chose that image for the background of the theme of 2020, where do we go from here, was that one of the things that has really illustrated what inequities exist, not only in our healthcare, but in our health, has been the COVID-19 pandemic. We are seeing much higher morbidity and mortality in communities of color. If you've been reading the Seattle Times lately, the Latino population in Washington state has been inadvertently hit much more than other communities across our entire state. And so we are really seeing this play out with COVID-19. And on top of that, there's a lot more vaccine hesitancy in a lot of these populations of people of color because of the reasons we talked about at the beginning of this. And so really sort of thinking through how COVID-19 has illustrated and has really highlighted the level of inequity that we have and sort of brainstorming how do we address these whenever we're moving forward in our work, how do we ensure that our populations that fall into these groups are sort of brought forward more, that they're given the right information, that everything has been translated appropriately, that we're really sort of encompassing the entire population instead of just the group that we address most often, that we serve the most often, but really being comprehensive in that. And so we've talked a lot about that with the COVID-19 vaccine team. Dr. Mattern has really been a huge advocate for that work as well. And so this concept of equity, I think, as everyone knows, has really become illustrated across the pandemic for the last year. Next slide, please. And so then again, these employee conversations happen in June and July. And there was lots of conversation, lots of really good talks with our employee colleagues. Tina and I led those first few weeks there in June and July. The major themes that came out were really around patient-centered care, employee opportunities to really understand equity, how we can engage the community in that, and then really thinking through organizational culture. And across the bottom is data and analytics, sort of thinking through the process and platforms. And you have seen this slide. I presented it, I think, in July as well, before I went on leave. But really thinking through that data and analytics is sort of the backbone of all of this, has been something that we've been working very, very hard on. Next slide, please. So in addition to understanding what our internal employees really feel about equity and where we should be going with this, there was also a review of equity initiatives, both large agency and also colleagues in the healthcare realm, to understand what they were doing around equity. So we reviewed the Institute for Healthcare Improvement's equity plan, the American Hospital Association health equity work, WISH's health equity work. We reviewed all of those plans, all those options. We also looked at MultiCare's health equity strategic plan, which MultiCare has started their own center for health equity. They've done a ton of work around this for many, many years. And so we really sort of looked at them as a really amazing ideal in an urban setting. And also the UW Medical Center also had a health equity blueprint that was reviewed. We had a conversation with one of the heads of equity over at MultiCare to better understand sort of their organizational flow and where it fit, as we sort of thought through how do we want this work to move forward. And so we were very intentional about making sure that whatever we are going to do is going to be something that we could commit to, and we would commit to that for a long period of time. Next slide, please. And so what ended up happening is we ended up with sort of an equity 2.0, looking at the IHI model, but Jeffersonizing it, which is kind of what we always do, is really sort of trying to take the best possible option and then making it relevant for what we've been doing. Whenever we were looking at MultiCare and the UW's models, they were amazing for a large medical center or, you know, massive healthcare systems. There really were not a lot of really great examples in rural communities, which is unsurprising. I think we hit that a lot. And so what we decided to do is look at the IHI model and then make sure that it was Jeffersonized. I believe that you've seen this slide as well, but really the work is being done by everyone, but the group on the left is coordinating it and driving a lot of this forward. And the IHI model is around addressing multiple determinants of health, eliminating racism and other forms of oppression, partnering with the community to improve health equity, making health equity a strategic priority, and building that infrastructure to support it. And we have a number of individuals as part of this team, and we have two of our physician leaders, Dr. Mattern and Dr. Parker, involved in it as well. And so that has been critically helpful whenever we're thinking about long-term strategy and engaging our clinicians as well. Next slide, please. So one of the things that the IHI has had us do over the last few months is they said, okay, you're part of this large cohort. And to be honest, the cohort is phenomenal. It's health systems from actually across the world. There are some folks from New Zealand and then Canada and the States. And so it's been really inspiring to speak with them and to be involved in all of these conversations with them. But what they said is we really need you to choose two projects. And like we do here at Jefferson, we decided on four. So couldn't stop at just two. Really having that data analytics all set up was one of the things that we thought was the most important. We still don't really understand our population, what we're looking at whenever we're pulling things out of Epic. And so really cleaning up the data on the front end to ensure that we are asking the right questions, that we're getting all of the what's known as the real data, the race, ethnicity, age, and language, as well as socioeconomic status data out of that, really ensuring that we have solid data in. So then whenever we're running our analysis, and I do see two of our data analysts on the call here today, whenever we're running our analyses, that they are accurate and they accurately represent our population. So that is sort of the backbone of all of this work. And that starts all the way from the first person that answers the phone or that sees a patient whenever they walk into the door, all the way through to whenever we're running our quality metrics for primary care or inpatient, and we're breaking it out by sort of those real race, ethnicity, age, and language, those real categories. The other big thing that came out was looking at those employee opportunities. And so figuring out a way, education is a really broad term, but figuring out a way to give our employees the opportunity to better understand equity, understand their own biases, understand their own experience of others, and translate that. And so this was another huge thing that we really wanted to do. The data and analytics was also going to inform minimizing barriers, or also known as access. So ensuring that our entire community, regardless of what population they are from, are getting the same level of access, they're getting the same level of care, and they all have the opportunity to have the same health outcome. And so whenever we're looking at our COVID-19 vaccine, we're looking at making sure that people of color who are within the age bands that we're looking at are coming forward at the same rate as people who are white. And so looking at that across everything that we're doing with access, which is a really, really big task, is one thing that we are going to be working on. And again, this is a huge process. And so obviously this will not be solved in a few months or maybe even a year, but we're really working towards it and getting a good level of data and analytics underneath that. And the last thing that came up, interestingly, employee conversations, and it was funny whenever Brandy and I were talking about this 2 days ago, she was like, well, how did this come up and how did this, you know, where did this even come from? And I was like, that's a great question. That was, several months ago. I don't exactly remember, but this concept of just culture, it came up from a few employees and a few different angles. And so Brandy's going to talk a little bit about how hardwiring this culture is really going to be one of the pieces of equity and how we're going to take an equity lens to that. Next slide.
All right. Thanks, Dunya. So she's right. When we were talking about this, it was so interesting because often, Dunya in her role of population health director is looking at the entire population, right? So she's thinking really, really big. And me in my sort of patient safety and quality role, I'm thinking about each individual patient. Did we do exactly the right things? Did we prevent all of the harm for that one human being? And in this case, we sort of flipped roles a little bit. So Dunya's sort of talking about the experience of one employee as we were having this conversation. And I was talking through the lens of just culture and what that looks like from a systems perspective. So we just had this really funny moment of, wow, our roles just reversed. Thanks, Dunya. That was a really great description. And the more I thought about it and the more I played with it, it really was starting to resonate with me how and why a just culture really is part and parcel of a culture of equity. And so, to back up, we talked a little bit about a just culture a couple of months ago as part of the board education. But just as a quick refresher, author Don Norman said that people make errors, which leads to accidents. Accidents lead to deaths. The standard solution is to blame the people involved. So if we find out who made the errors and punish them, we solve the problem. Right? Wrong. The problem is seldom the fault of an individual. It's the fault of a system. Change the people without changing the system and the problems will continue. And I think that's really good as we think about both the just culture and the culture of equity. So a just culture, just again, as kind of a quick reminder, is one that recognizes that human beings are fallible. We make mistakes, and a just culture doesn't punish humans for making human mistakes. It really seeks to create an open, fair, and just culture by creating a culture of learning, using lessons learned to create safer systems, and then by managing behavioral choices. On the other hand, a culture of equity is made up of really just two parts: identify the problem and take accountability for it. So that's from the Advancing Health Equity site, which is through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And they've got some really, really great materials on a culture of equity and how to achieve that. But a culture of equity is really essential to the success of quality and culture of safety as we're seeking to reduce disparities. Next slide, please. So as we think about just culture, it's really important that we seek to understand the why. And I think that most of you probably remember when we did our education, there was this little trifold booklet that we had. And inside the trifold, we have an algorithm for addressing things that happen. So adverse events, mistakes, harm events, those kinds of things, we have an algorithm to walk through. And one of the problems with doing that, if you don't really dig into the why and understand the investigation part of it, is that you might jump to the wrong conclusion. So what do we mean by that? If we're thinking about this, again, sort of through this lens of both just culture and an equity lens. I was thinking about this, and the best way to illustrate it, I think, is just to take an example. So, for example, if you have an employee who's consistently late to work, the employee's been counseled, they've read the policy, they agreed to make the necessary changes, but the behavior continues. The leader becomes frustrated, the team becomes frustrated, and the late arrivals start to impact patient care or operations. So, if a leader were to sit down with that individual and take the algorithm that they've been given and walk through the questions asked, we would start by asking, was it the duty of that employee to follow a rule known to the employee? And the answer would be yes. Was it possible to follow the rule? Again, the answer would be yes. Did the employee knowingly violate the rule? Yes, because you've had the conversation, they've read the policy. Did the benefit of the breach exceed the risk? No. Did the employee have a good faith but mistaken belief that the violation was insignificant? Again, no. So really where we land on that is reckless behavior. And what the algorithm would call for, again, holding people responsible for their behaviors, is that we would consider punitive action. But if we pause here and we think about the investigation piece, again, really kind of trying to understand why. What happens when you as the leader ask that question and you find out that that employee does not own a car or is caring for a dying patient, might be holding down two jobs as a single parent, or the victim of domestic violence? Does your answer change then? Well, if we're viewing this through the just culture and the equity lens, that why leads us to a different path, because A, we would recognize the disparity involved, and then B, we would work to support the employee to reduce that disparity as much as possible. We'd link them with resources, we'd consider alternative solutions, we would do everything we could to reduce that gap that exists. So remembering that the just culture is really, really meant to understand the why behind the choices that people make and the actions that take place, and also address those systems-based issues that contribute to errors, shortcuts, or workarounds. And in the culture of equity, we recognize the disparities openly, and we're open to reducing them, and everyone in the process knows what their role is. So it's incredibly transparent, which is, again, the intent behind a just culture. So the answer is, when you apply both consistently, the humane, equitable, and predictable response to error helps us foster an environment that encourages transparency, inquiry, and learning about error. So if our goal is to keep all of our employees and patients safe, then both of them are necessary to accomplish that. Next slide. All right. Questions. Junya and I both thought that there may be questions, so we wanted to leave. So we both talked really fast, but we also intentionally wanted to leave enough time for questions because we thought there may be some. Junya, is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I didn't think. I mean, I wasn't able to see anyone's face whenever I was talking through those facts and those wheat pasted, what were called info bombs at the time that were pasted all over Capitol Hill back in my relatively rebellious youth. And so I couldn't see the level of shock at the fact that Black women in California are 400% more likely to die in childbirth as white women in California. Like, that's astounding to me. And I still can't see any faces, but I'm hopeful that this conversation and some of the things that we've talked about have incited a level of like, oh my gosh, it's not good. We need to fix it in the group. So
I have a comment and a few questions, if I might. This is Case. So first of all, thank you very much. Very helpful. And my first sort of mundane question is, do we have access to these slides because they weren't in our packet, and I would love to get a copy of them. Second of all, I have heard, and I believe it's been confirmed, that there are tribes in New Mexico and elsewhere in this country where the death rate from COVID-19 is actually 10 times higher than it is elsewhere in the country, particularly when we compare them to the white population. So I'd love a few comments about that. And then finally, you use the term, quote, Indian men, end quote, on one of the slides. And one of the things that I've been struggling with is the question of what is the proper way to refer to indigenous populations? I know it's a tricky thing, and the best thing is to ask them, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are about that.
I'm happy to address the last part, but I think it's American Indian, Alaskan Native, Native American. I would really say to ask the individuals themselves. This came out of a Washington Department of Corrections report, which is interesting. And I'm happy to share the website and all the resources associated with that. The tribes having a 10 times higher mortality rate, I have not heard that statistic, Case, and I'm not actually all that surprised. I don't have anything else other than it's really unfortunate, and we really have to, I think, do better. Brandy, did you have anything around that?
No, I don't. I have seen a couple articles. Dr. Mattern mentioned one earlier this week, noting some of the disparities among populations of color with the COVID, with regard to COVID. So, but I hadn't heard that specific statistic.
And yes, you'll have access to the slides.
Great.
Of course.
Is there anybody else have questions? Excellent presentation. Great work that you're doing. And we're all looking forward to more reports and watching your progress as you go forward. I see that Matt has his hand raised. Matt?
Yeah. It's not really a question. I just wanted to say this is incredibly important work and really appreciate you guys doing this. And it was powerful information. So thank you.
Anyone else? Case, you have your hand.
I do have another question. I'm supposedly on the team that's helping look at our health equity with the Institute work. I've missed a few of the sessions, and I'm wondering if I know Tina has helped me keep abreast of what the opportunities are. Is she still the best person for me to connect with to make sure that I'm up to speed when it comes to the programs and the projects that Jefferson Healthcare is doing?
She is. She's our team manager and keeps us all organized. So she would be the best person.
All right. Good. I'll continue to work with her. And having been on at least, well, on a couple of the international discussions, I think I can attest to the fact that the work that we're doing on this is remarkable to hear from institutions around the country and around the world. And we're in good company with, I know Boston Children's is in our cohort group. So I think that's great. And I'm also terribly disappointed. I had not heard the fact that Dr. Ben Danielson had resigned. And I'm devastated by that thought since I did do some of my training at Children's, and I have a great deal of respect for them. And I plan to look into what is it in particular that they weren't willing to address that caused him to take such a radical step. And then a final question. Equity, it's very easy for us, I think, or it's easier for us to look at health equity issues when we're looking at people of color. It may be harder for us to look at health equity when we're talking about people who are of our color and are perhaps drug abusers or people who are challenged in other ways. And I know that our institution has been questioned on a number of occasions in the past years as to whether or not we were treating people who are addicted to drugs in an equitable fashion. And I know that there was a brief look at that, perhaps I want to say a year ago, but it could be longer. And I wonder if that's an area that in which there is any interest for us to look at that again, and perhaps a little more broadly.
We have two more minutes, three more minutes.
I think your point is well taken. I want Dunia to comment on this as well, but I think it can be challenging to fix something without the data to know whether those concerns can be substantiated or better understood. And so I think going back to what Dunia mentioned earlier about how data and analytics are really the backbone for all of this work, I would say that that's such an important part of our emphasis and our focus right now, so that we can identify potential disparities among all different populations, and then we can begin to work on closing those gaps. And now I'll let Dunia.
I would echo that as well. And one of our analysts, Adam York, has done an incredible amount of analysis around our AIMS program and our MAP services, which are in our primary care centers, and really understanding the usage patterns of the ED of those populations. And so I think that would probably be a logical next step for a lot of the work that he has been doing. We didn't even get into all of the work that Laura Showers and Jackie Levin really led, and thinking through populations of transgender and gender nonconforming individuals. And so really understanding anything that, you know, the new terminology in the space is often around belonging and othering, anything that puts someone into an othering category, and understanding, does it look different for them? And how do we make sure that they get the same two steps so they can see over the fence across the board? But also understanding too that, you know, this is a long process. We're talking about a marathon, not really a sprint here. And so being really intentional and really careful about the way that we enter this work so that it's sustainable, because I don't think we can't afford to just do it and then have it not continue on forward.
Thank you, Brandy, Dunia. Excellent job. As I said, great reports. And we look forward to hearing from you again in the future. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Jill, if I may follow up on Case's question and Dunia and Brandy's comments, this is, I think, as an industry and certainly Jefferson Healthcare, this is such a target-rich environment that I think the greatest frustration is where there is so much opportunity and so many things that we would like to do, but we have to be real thoughtful about how we approach the work, prioritize the work, so that where we do go, we do it well. But I think that's been part of the awakening for me, is there's nothing superficial about this. This is to the core. And, you know, I think as recently as last meeting, I was saying, you know, 18 months from now, my goal with respect to this work is to say we're still doing it. Well, you know, 5 years from now, we're still doing this. We're still learning. We're still shocked. We're still getting better. But hopefully the only difference is a large body of work that we can feel really good about. And we've, you know, we started that.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. All right, then we will go ahead now and recess until 3:30. So we'll meet you back here at 3:30. And thank you again for great work.